Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. My name is Russ Steinberg. I'm joined, as always, by my co-editors, Chris Schutte and Greg Mitchell. We're recording this on Sunday night, so the weekend's games are just about done. Last I saw, Gonzaga was up big on Washington, so the weekend's action is pretty much settled at this point. We've played about a month of the season. I think by now we have a pretty good idea of where a lot of our teams stand. So we're going to start the way we always do, just by going around and talking about a team that's impressed us or something that's stuck out or whatever. Then I think we're going to break down our power rankings as we have them. Of course, we have 10 or 11 people on staff who actually vote, including the three of us. So we're going to debate who falls where, because this was a really tough weekend to try and place teams. So I guess I'll start with a team that I think we all had on our radar, wasn't really sure what to do with them, and then they picked up a really nice win this week, and they ended up in my power rankings. Not sure if they're going to be in everybody's, but they're probably good enough to be ranked tomorrow. That's Stephen F. Austin, the Lumberjacks, out of the Southland Conference. They are 9-1, and until this week had not beaten a top 100 team, had not beaten a top 150 team. Then they went to Louisiana Tech and won there 85-83, followed that up with a win over a bad Rice team. Just looking at their numbers right now, they are the best team in the country in defensive turnover percentage, and not a coincidence, the second best in steal percentage. They are led by a couple of younger players, or really one, Kevon Harris. So he wasn't around. He's a sophomore. He wasn't around during those tournament runs of a few years ago, but TJ Holyfield was. He is now a junior, their center. He's put together a few really nice games, though he struggled against Rice, and it looks like Kyle Keller has his team maybe not right back to where it was under Brad Underwood, but certainly a contender in the Southland Conference. I know we like Lamar as a site to win that league. Stephen F. Austin might have something to say about that. We'll find out a little bit more about them in the coming weeks. They play at LSU on Saturday and then at Mizzou next Tuesday. They certainly don't need to win either of those games to solidify themselves as a Southland contender, but we'll see how they compete. Their only loss was by 5 at Mississippi State. So they've done pretty much everything you could ask of them to this point and more. So that's why I have Stephen F. Austin ranked this week. Chris, I know you have somebody that, again, just like Stephen F. Austin, just recently ended up on our radar.
So my team this week is the Ball State Cardinals. Everybody saw their upset against Notre Dame with the buzzer beater by Taylor Persons. Then he followed it up yesterday, Saturday, with another buzzer beater against Valpo. They're up to 6-4 on the year. They've won their last five. They started the year off with a pretty tough stretch. They were kind of flying all over the country. They had road games against Dayton and Oklahoma and then Oregon and Bucknell. But ever since their loss to Bucknell, they're 5-0. They're 4-0 against teams in the state of Indiana. Their offense is playing really well. Obviously, Taylor Persons is the go-to guy, but they've got a couple other really nice players. One in particular, Kyle Mallers. He's actually from the high school I went to. I think he's their second leading scorer. He's given them a nice offensive punch in his second year, and also guys like Tajai Teague and John Trail Walker have been really good for him. And I think that coming into the season, a lot of people kind of tabbed Ball State as potentially being one of the better teams in the MAC. And I think that so far, especially after this recent stretch, they've kind of proven that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, and I had them coming in, I think, at 25 on my ballot. Greg, you have somebody who's kind of off of my radar, but maybe a team that we should be looking at.
So yeah, you know, South Dakota is not in my top 25 right now because they don't have the wins at this point. But I think at the end of the year, I think they're actually a better team than South Dakota State is. Even though I do have the Jackrabbits in my top 25 on the strength of that win they had at Ole Miss, and then they competed really well at Wichita State this past week and scored, I think more points than any opponent has in that arena for like 15 years. So I think South Dakota State and Mike Dahmer are obviously very good, but I think South Dakota has the potential to be a more complete team. They have a physical backcourt, a really nice versatile forward in Trey Burch Manning, and then Matt Mooney is an absolute star. And if it wasn't for Mike Dahm, I think, you know, he'd be this Summit Player of the Year, you know, type hype. And I saw him here in Kansas City when they played UMKC a couple weeks ago. And he's absolutely dynamic, off the ball especially. Like he just always seems to be in the right place. And he's the type of guy I could see going overseas and just spending, you know, 15 years over there. Because he's such an offensive force. So I like South Dakota a lot, and that's a team I know a few people have them in their rankings, and I can see them rising up here as the season goes on. Did you have some thoughts on Matt Mooney, Chris?
Yeah, I agree with your sense that by the end of the year, we might be looking at South Dakota as the best team in the Summit League. Obviously, they won it last year, and they bring back a lot of guys that from that team. And you're spot on about Mooney. I mean, he's just a really good offensive player. He's really good at picking his spots, and he can hurt you from all over the floor. He's a good spot-up shooter. He can create for himself, obviously, coming off ball screens, that kind of stuff. I think they're probably a little bit better defensively than South Dakota State is. South Dakota State is probably a little bit better offensively, simply because of Dom. But I would agree that those two teams are probably going to be 1 and 2 in the Summit League.
And South Dakota really doesn't have, you know, they played at Duke last weekend. And actually I think they outscored Duke in the second half, which, you know, it was a 16 point loss. So you can take that for what it is, but their schedule, you know, they haven't had very many top 200 KenPom opponents up till now, just 3 TCU and Duke and then a Drake. They lost it to TCU and Duke, and they won that third game against Drake. They do play at UCLA here before Summit League starts. So, you know, they haven't had the opportunities really to impress with kind of those like solid mid-tier wins. But I mean, again, that's a team I think we should watch.
Yeah, I think I tweeted something earlier today after their game that they just done a really good job of taking care of business against those 203 level KenPom teams. And obviously they don't have a marquee win like South Dakota State has, but I mean, that's what good teams do. They beat the teams that they're supposed to beat. And that's what South Dakota has been doing so far.
And then that's also a program that has never played in the NCAA tournament as a Division I. Isn't that right?
Yeah. They made their first year in D1 was 2010. Craig Smith, their new coach, got there in, I want to say, 2015. So he's only been there for 3 or 4 years, but they're last year was their best year, obviously winning the conference. And I think he's kind of gotten that program to a point where they're going to be pretty regular contenders.
Mm-hmm. And that's always a lot of fun come a conference tournament time. If you have a team that is a contender, that it would be their first time. That's, you know, always a little bit more oomph behind those stories.
That's one of my favorite things about the Summit League. They've got, I don't know if it's 3 or 4. I'd have to ask Ben about how many teams they have, but there's at least 3 off the top of my head that I can think of that have never made the tournament with South Dakota, Fort Wayne, and Omaha.
Who was a shot away last year. So
they were. They were close.
Almost had them out of the club.
All right, do we want to get to rankings?
Yeah, let's get to rankings. So looking at all 3 of our ballots now, we all have Gonzaga number 1, despite their loss to Villanova. I think we're all in agreement there that they are the best team in the mid-majors. I'm changing my ballot right now. I'm keeping Gonzaga number one, but I'm not going to punish Nevada as much as I think I had initially intended.
You both here.
Well, I'll tell you why. You both have them at number two. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have them that high, I don't think. I think I'm keeping St. Mary's in that spot. But the reason is because I tried to step back a little bit this week with all of the upsets and stay more away from, you know, this team lost, so they're moving down X number of spots. This team won, so they're moving up. And look at just simply who the best teams are, regardless. And Bresme has a lot to do with it, but regardless of what happened yesterday or the day before. And Nevada, if you look at what they've done and you look at their two losses, they went toe-to-toe with two top 20 caliber teams in TCU and Texas Tech. Fell a little bit short. They lost by a combined 10 points in those games, and the Texas Tech game was in overtime. Have wins over URI and Davidson. That KenPom page is filled with green. I think they've clearly shown that they are one of the best, maybe 30, at max 35 teams in the country, and because of that, they deserve to be in the top three or four. I had them at five, but I'm reconsidering. Chris, you and I had Middle Tennessee at number three. Greg, you had them at four. Regardless, they're really good. We all had Rhode Island really high. Chris, you had Boise, I think, higher. Well, not too much higher than me, but what have you seen from them that would make you put them ahead of, say, Rhode Island and St. Mary's?
For one, they've got a couple of really good wins so far this year. Obviously, the big one was against Oregon, but then you add in a win against Loyola Chicago and Illinois State. And I just think they're really talented. We've talked about them a couple times here on the podcast. I mean, one thing I was impressed with them was that after that win against Oregon, they came home and they took care of business against a Portland team that's in the 300s. But, you know, when you're coming off such an emotional win in an environment like Oregon, sometimes you can get a little lackadaisical in your next matchup, especially against a bad opponent. But they've come out and won their last two games by 20 points apiece. And I just think that with Chandler Hutchinson and a couple other guys like Christian Stengfelder and Lexus Williams, that they're at worst the third best team in the Mountain West, probably the second best. And I think so far this year, the Mountain West has probably been the best mid-major conference, maybe. And I mean, their only loss is to Iowa State on a neutral court, so it's hard to really, really knock them for that.
Right. You brought up Loyola, and that's a team that I had a little bit of trouble ranking. I had them in my poll last week a lot lower. I moved them up to 13 with that win over Florida. But the interesting thing to me there, looking at their resume, their one loss was to Boise State that you mentioned.
Ugly.
Yeah, very ugly. But their only good win was that one at Florida, and I wanted to try to be careful not putting too much stock in just one game, because I don't think any of us is going to sit here and try to argue that Loyola is actually a better team than Florida. It was just a weird thing that happened, and certainly give Loyola a ton of credit for it and reward them accordingly. But I didn't want to put them too high just based on the one game, and it looked like you both may have agreed with me on that. I think we all have them in that same range. I had them at 13. Chris, you have them at 13. And then Greg has them at 16, it looks like.
I completely agree with that. And I don't know how you guys factor in injuries, but I don't know if you saw, they have lost their starting point guard, Clayton Custer, for or Acuster, I'm not sure how he pronounces it, but he went down right before halftime in the Florida game, and I saw that they announced he's out indefinitely. It was kind of an ugly injury, so I don't know what that means. And you know, they're already out, or they were without for the Florida game for the whole game. Ben Richardson, who's another starting guard who's played. He's a senior and he's been like a factor all 4 years he's been there. So as awesome as a win that was, they certainly do have some questions going forward. Even though a few of the guys off the bench, played well in that game.
Yeah, and I think that this also plays into what I was just talking about, how it's hard to rank. It's hard to get away from that game of, you know, that they lost yesterday, so I'm going to move them down. They won yesterday, so I'm going to move them up. And to look at just how good you think the teams are, how do you factor in a loss like Clayton Custer, who has been a key piece to that team for several years now? And if he's out for any extended period of time, I mean, do you almost punish them preemptively for that because you know that they're not going to be as good now? Or do you continue to just look at the body of work that they've turned in so far?
At least to some degree, I like to think that the main thing I do is as I'm going from 1 to 2 and 2 to 3 and 3 to 4 is would the team sitting above the team below them, if they were on a neutral court, would they win? Now, obviously you can't always do that because you have to reward, the resume, I guess, at some point, even though ideally that would speak for itself. I think at least in my mind, I think I do kind of preemptively punish them for that, even though I don't know if that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, there's no like official rules.
Maybe we should make some
to how this is done. I think it's more fun without them because then people could get more angry.
Yes.
Right. Team that I was disappointed. A couple of teams that I was disappointed to see lose some games this week. UT Arlington. I dropped them down to number 12. They've had sort of a rough go of it lately. I know they lost to Florida Gulf Coast. And then, did they take another loss this week?
Yeah, they lost it at UNI.
Yeah, they lost to UNI. So neither of those particularly bad losses, but at the same time, you also have to take into account that you have to win your games. And it looks like UTA, they had that good win against BYU back on November 18th, but it looks like they haven't really done a whole lot of notes since then, even though Kevin Hervey and Eric Neal are two extraordinary basketball players.
Yeah, they're one of those teams that when ranking them, I kind of step back away from the resume. And they're one of those teams that I look at in terms of talent and how good I think that they can be. So they're one of the teams that I had a hard time ranking this week, because I think I had them top five last week. And like you said, they lost two games. You would think that should probably drop them a lot, but I have a hard time ranking a team that has guys like Hervey and Neal below some teams that probably don't have the same amount of talent. So I think they're an interesting case, and I'm curious to see where other people are going to rank them.
Yeah, I mean, in the UNI loss, you know, they were in it until the final few minutes. That was a close game. And then when they played Alabama, that was a game that they lost by 1 point as well. I know that was early in the year, but, you know, had that one gone, you know, a possession here, possession there, that'd be one hell of a resume. But I guess you could say that for a lot of teams in a lot of games, so I don't know that's the best argument.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. One team I don't think any of us had a problem dropping a little bit this week was Missouri State, who lost to Oral Roberts today. They can't be losing that.
That's such a bad loss.
And I just wrote on Friday that, it seemed like they were, because they had an early loss to North Dakota State at home, and that's not the worst thing in the world, because that's a I don't know how good they are this year, but it is, you know, a solid program recently. But it with as much a talent as they have, it just it seemed like another indication that, like last year, like the last few years, it's going to be an inconsistent team. They were on a 7-game winning streak. It seemed like that might be behind them. And then that's not a good Oral Roberts team, I don't think. So that's a bad loss. I have them at 25 just because they have an NBA guy and a lot of really good players. But this is a year for Paul Less. They really have to have a good season.
Yeah, Oral Roberts.
Yeah.
Sorry to catch up, but Oral Roberts didn't even have their best player in Albert Owens. He's a low post guy that's pretty much a double-double guy. So exactly, that's pretty bad loss.
Should we address the elephant, or should I say the tiger in the room, and talk for a minute about Towson?
No.
No. Okay. All right.
Let's just kidding.
I had Towson at 23, and that's actually lower than Chris had them. You had them at 19. Greg had them at 24. They are one of several teams in the country that I'm looking at that have really good records, and that really doesn't mean much. Albany is another one of those teams. Albany is 10-1. I think that's also Towson's record. Wagner, I think, is 7-1. None of them have beaten any good teams. But at some point, you do have to acknowledge that, hey, they are winning the games that are on their schedule, so that's cool. It does... sorry, I had to... HQ's doing another $10,000 game, and I had to just answer that real quickly. Sorry. Thankfully, conference play is starting soon, so that all of those teams are going to start facing other teams that are at about their skill level. So we'll learn a little bit more then. But I will say, until Towson improves its resume a little bit, I can't imagine moving them up too much higher than they are currently.
Yeah, the reason I put them in is that they won that Gulf Coast Showcase, which had Missouri State. They didn't play Missouri State, but they did play Georgia Southern, who I think I talked about in the last podcast, which had been a top 100 KenPom team. They're now at 106, and I think the world of them. So, you know, Towson having beat them, I couldn't justify to myself putting the Eagles in and not the Tigers. One thing that's kind of interesting about them, and maybe just maybe if we can get a hold of their SID, perhaps we can do a story on them. I don't know your thoughts on that, guys. I don't know if they would talk with us.
I wouldn't be able to tell you how to contact their SID.
So if I can figure that out, I may reach out, because one thing that's interesting, and I don't know how interesting this is or not, but Of the guys in their rotation, it looks like only one is a transfer. Deshaun Mormon, he came from Cincinnati, but other than that, everybody else that plays heavy minutes is not a transfer. Which I think is, I would assume, is there aren't very many teams, at least those that are successful in this day and age, that are like that.
Yeah. Sorry, I was answering HQ again. For those who don't know what we're talking about, by the way, which I assume would be all of you, Towson's SID or whoever runs their Twitter account has been relentless in our DMs lately, trying to get us to give them a little bit of respect. I think we're doing that now by ranking them.
They have a 3-point loss to Old Dominion. That's it. And I think we all think Old Dominion's really good. And they beat LaSalle in a neutral court. And I don't know that LaSalle has been as good as a lot of us thought they might be. So, but that's not an awful win. So it's, I can see them being good. I don't know much about the CAA, admittedly.
Well, the CAA, I could tell you, is a really balanced league this year. It's actually going to be a lot of fun to watch, because Towson is competitive, Charleston is good, William and Mary has been actually a bit of a surprise, I think, and Hofstra is solid too, so that's going to be fun to watch. Chris, one thing I wanted to ask you about, Actually, I want to ask you about a couple of things. First, why did you drop Vermont so far?
I don't think they've looked all that great lately. They've got.
What about the Kentucky game?
That was a month ago?
Yeah, but so yeah.
Here's my thinking. They've lost three straight games to Bucknell, Marquette, and Northeastern. Their team is built essentially around slowing the pace and playing, you know, really good defense. That's something they haven't done against Bucknell, Marquette, or even Northeastern to an extent. And I know that all three of those games have been they've been road games, and I think I'm looking at their KenPom page. Their only home game so far this year was against a non-D1. But I think at some point, when you have a trend like that in three straight games where you're not doing what you're known for, I think it's time to maybe take a step back and reevaluate them a little bit. And I had kept them pretty high in my rankings last week, even after the loss. But seeing that the trend kind of continued this week, I did drop them. Maybe a little bit further than I should, but if they play up to the level that we obviously know that they're capable of, they'll be back up in no time.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. And Vermont, maybe for a lot of us, maybe even myself included, is still just benefiting from the high ranking they started with. I wanted to also ask you about Penn, who you gave the number 25 spot to. I don't hate that move at all. You're not the only one who ranked them this week either. The Ivy League, I know we talked about it a lot. And it's not a league that's as good, I think, as we thought it was going to be. And I think we're all starting to think that Penn, if they could sneak into that Ivy League tournament, they could get the bid out of the Ivy. And they had a good win this week. They won at Dayton. First time Dayton's ever lost to an Ivy League school. Maybe this is the time that we give them some respect. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think at the most simple level that I can describe it in, Penn is the only Ivy League team winning games right now. They're 8-4, won three in a row. They've won four out of their last five, that only loss being at Villanova. And all four of their most recent wins have been in road games. So I'm giving credit where credit's due. And like you said, we've mentioned them as potentially getting in at that fourth spot and having that home court advantage in the Ivy League tournament. And who's to say that they're playing for the fourth spot? Maybe they're going to be playing for the one or two spot.
I mean, I would like to see how Yale looks when Mekhi Mason comes back. I actually haven't heard an update about that in a while, so I'm not sure what his progress looks like, to be honest with you. I know Yale played St. Bonaventure tough and lost this weekend, but they would be one I would keep on my radar. Harvard's been a disappointment, which is unfortunate. I haven't heard much from Princeton lately. I'm not actually sure
what they've done.
They're 2-6.
Their only wins are against teams around 300 in KenPom. So,
yeah, and like each one of those six losses, I think by itself is excusable. But you can't, if you're going to lose to Lehigh at home, you can't also lose at George Washington and at St. Joe's and still expect to be, you know, considered the best team in the Ivy League. But again, you know, the conference play hasn't started yet. Once it does, we'll have a much clearer idea there, I guess. Greg, I'm looking at your rankings now, and unfortunately, I see nothing that
you gotta get mad about something
object
there.
To. I'm not going to get mad about it, but maybe you could talk to us a little bit about South Dakota State. I don't think either of us have them ranked
As I said earlier, I think it was impressive the way they played at Wichita State. I think they scored 50 points in the first half, 85 points overall. I think they have a backcourt that has, obviously we know Mike Dom is good. Tellinghuizen is a nice second option. The freshman guard that I know you liked a lot, Chris, and I guess you're probably more qualified. Obviously, you're more qualified to talk about him than I am, but David Hankins, he's had his moments this year, I believe, especially against – I can't remember if he was one against Ole Miss that played really well. Yeah, he had 22 points against in the win at Ole Miss. He's really good, and he's a freshman, and he's the type of guy where if he continues to develop, I think they've got three, really good scorers there they can go to. So again, they had the win at Ole Miss. They then lost in Sioux Falls to Missouri State, who, despite today's loss, I still think is at the very least a talented team. I think they have at least recently impressed. I'm probably just still mesmerized by Mike Dom, but for now, I still think they're a good team that's worthy of a top 25 vote.
I think we're all mesmerized by Mike Dom.
Who wouldn't be?
Right. He is the burliest of burly boys.
Yeah. Chris, are we ever going to get another large adult sun ranking?
I don't know. If you keep bugging me about it, I might get to it eventually.
I am going to keep bugging you about it because I know people are going to click on it.
If you slide in my DMs enough and badger me on Twitter, I might come around and eventually do it.
All right, everyone listening, please slide into Chris's DMs. Greg said something a minute ago that kind of got me thinking about not Missouri State in particular. We've talked about them and that loss to Oral Roberts, but combine that with Valpo dropping a couple of games. I don't think who's that other team. Yeah, Loyola doesn't have a bad loss on their record. Northern Iowa doesn't either. But we know that the Missouri Valley is a lot better than we thought it would be. And Harry Schrader, the godfather of Missouri Valley basketball, wrote about it this weekend for us. But if the Valley's going to be a multi-bid league, you can't lose a lot of non-conference games. And every non-conference loss that comes up, even the ones you would expect to see, is kind of just another missed opportunity from a mid-major. And it's not fair at all. Like, it's not fair to Northern Iowa, a team that's beaten SMU, NC State, UNLV, and UT Arlington, that because they've also lost to North Carolina and Villanova, that maybe now they have to beat one of Iowa State or Xavier to have a realistic at-large case. But that's just the way that it is in with the way that the committee does things now. So I'm just wondering what you guys think about the Valley and its chances of getting more than one bid this year, because I think there are definitely multiple teams in that conference that are worthy of going to the NCAA tournament. Just not sure whether that's going to happen.
I mean, as you just listed off, if they can win one of those games against Iowa State and Xavier, and again, the Iowa State one is in Des Moines, and somehow they got Xavier at home. I'd like to know how that, I don't know if you guys know how that came to be. But if they can split those games, the wins you mentioned and no bad loss on the resume heading in a conference play, if they take care of a business, that strikes me as, I don't know how strong the bubble is going to be this year. I guess that, we're probably still a month and a half or so away from understanding that at least a little bit, but that seems like an at-large resume that can play.
Yeah. I think Northern Iowa, right, now would have the best case, But the point that I was trying to make, even if I didn't do it very eloquently, is that a loss to a really good team out of conference, if you're in a major seven league, is something that you shake off and don't even really think about because it happens. But each one of those, if you're in the Valley or the Mountain West or even the A-10, is a huge missed opportunity that you feel like might come back to bite you in March.
No, that's a great point. And I guess that even if they have a game with Iowa State on neutral court and a home game that they leave, lose to, Xavier team, which could win the Big East, that even more seems like a missed opportunity. So I think that's a great point.
Yeah, going off of that, what you're saying about the teams in the Valley and the Mountain West who get these opportunities against Power 5 teams for quality wins, I think that's why we were so disappointed with Iowa this week, or not Iowa, Nevada, having those two really good opportunities to get some quality wins and maybe even seal an at-large bid. But now they're going to be going into conference play with a little bit of uncertainty. And Nevada is obviously a team that's really good and definitely tournament quality team. But, if they have a couple of hiccups in tournament play or get bounced in the Mountain West tournament, then obviously they're probably going to be looking back at those games against Texas Tech and TCU thinking, man, if we could have had those, we might be in a more comfortable position.
Right. Having to play 18 games in conference still also makes it tough because you're playing 18 games against teams like Colorado State or Air Force or San Jose State or whatever. Yeah. So the best team in the country could have a hiccup against a bad team. Like we saw Florida losing. Loyola Chicago is not a bad team, but that's a team that Florida shouldn't be losing to. Like if Nevada drops one on the road at Air Force, people are going to point to that and go, oh, look at that. Of course, Nevada doesn't deserve to get in. But then, Duke lost at BC the other day, and Duke is going to have enough quality wins where it's not going to matter. They're still going to be a one or probably at worst a two seed in the NCAA tournament. So it's your margin for error is just so, so slim. And that means you can't have any bad days, especially once conference play starts.
Yeah, it's a no win. That's a great point. But, if the Valley were to somehow have an at-large, I think just for the league's overall psyche, that's, huge after Wichita State. So, that would be huge.
And that'll be huge until, late March when Ben Jacobson is hired to coach Iowa or whatever.
What do you guys think of Middle Tennessee's case as an at-large? I'm looking at their KenPom page. 7-1. Yeah, a couple wins over Florida Gulf Coast, Vanderbilt, Mississippi, two top 100 KenPom teams. And then they have neutral court games coming up against Auburn and Princeton. We obviously saw what they could do last year with how dominant they were in Conference USA. Do you think that they have to have a similar showing this year to be considered for an at-large, or do you think they have a little bit more leeway where they can lose maybe two or three games rather than just the one?
If nothing else, I would think that they've earned a little bit of leeway because of how consistent they've been now over the past 3 years. So I don't know if that's something that factors into the official analysis of a committee, but I think they're human beings, and I think it's hard for them to, if they see that name, that's something that, pops to mind right away. So I think all the success they've had over the past 3 years should maybe work in their favor, but again, I don't know. And I don't know that a Conference USA is, I don't know that it's strong enough that they can afford that many losses, especially since as nice of a win as it is over Ole Miss on the road and at home, Vanderbilt on the road. Those aren't the real statement wins that anyone's going to remember. I mean, it's a great win. It's, anytime you beat an SEC team as a mid-major, that's a huge accomplishment. But I don't it's not the screaming, marquee win that I don't know if that many mid majors have, but I guess long story short, I'll stop rambling. I think they would have some leeway.
Yeah, I think Middle Tennessee has a couple of things going for it. One, as you just said, Greg, is what they've done the last few years, and that shouldn't factor in, but it does in the eyes of the committee. The committee knows that they've been rewarded for rewarding Middle Tennessee in the past. So just that name recognition does help. The other thing is, in theory, this year, the committee is going to look at more than just RPI in terms of statistics. And I think that's going to help Middle Tennessee a lot, because Conference USA has a number of, I'll say, quality teams that aren't NCAA tournament worthy. Thinking like mid-tier NIT teams, thinking specifically Old Dominion, Marshall, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech. So while in the past beating those teams might not have done much for anybody, that will help Middle Tennessee out in, say, KenPom, which I think some people are going to look at this year a little bit more than they have in the past. So that's going to help them out. Obviously, you can't afford to lose too many games in conference. But if you have a hiccup here or there, I think it'll be okay, especially with the wins over Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, and the two over Gulf Coast, particularly if Gulf Coast makes the NCAA tournament, which they should. But win over Auburn, neutral court, coming up this Saturday, absolutely huge if they could get it. And if they do, then I think Middle Tennessee's got a really, really strong case if they run into trouble in Conference USA tournament of getting that at large.
Well, that's reassuring, because I really like this Middle Tennessee team. Obviously, I wrote on the site the other day about Nick King, who's been maybe the best mid-major player in the country this year. I don't think it's a huge stretch to say that. But then obviously they've got fan favorite Giddy Potts, and they've kind of become a staple in the mid-major fandom in March for one of those teams to keep an eye out for. So keeping my fingers crossed for the Blue Raiders moving forward. I think that they're pretty heavy Conference USA favorites, so I'm not worried about them. I was just curious to see what your guys' thoughts were on their at-large potential.
Yeah, it's a topic that I'm pretty sure we're going to revisit probably a couple of times before March rolls around for them, because I think they might have a more unique case than most similar mid-major teams. Let's see, was there anything else we wanted to get to? Do we have any trivia or anything?
I was looking at something earlier. Give me a second to pull it up. It's kind of based off of what we were talking about. It's teams that I've got trivia. Unless you guys have anything else you guys.
Well, I didn't get my whack minute, so I'm kind of upset about that.
That's like a few in a row.
I was waiting for someone to say it. I think that's kind of rude. I had to bring it up myself.
I apologize. I apologize profusely.
Well, I'll just say this. What's good in the WAC? New Mexico State swept its rivals, New Mexico and UTEP. So that's exciting for them. They play both teams twice, so 4-0. And then a Canyon lost at Talking Stick Arena to St. John's earlier in the week. That was their first real test of the year. It was kind of a competitive game, but it didn't go so well. So that was disappointing. And as we've talked about it, you know, at length here, they didn't have a schedule that was set up to really tell us that much about them that early in the season. So we'll have to wait on that. And that's my whack minute.
And we're all better for it.
Hope you guys enjoyed.
I was disappointed that didn't end up being like a whack 10 minutes.
No.
Yeah, I was ready to walk away from my mic and come back 10 minutes later and have you still be going.
Yeah, unfortunate.
I started making a sandwich and everything. All right, do we have trivia?
Yeah, it's not very good, but I mean, it never is.
We don't have standards here.
Speak for yourself. Okay. So I'm looking at records or whatever you want to call it. There are 5 teams in the country that are undefeated on the road with at least 3 wins. They are all mid-majors. Can you name them? So I'm looking for 5 teams that are 3-0 on the road or better.
That is a great question, Chris.
Thank you.
It's an amazing question.
Courtesy of warrennolan.com, which if you guys don't use, it's really good for RPI and team sheets and whatnot.
Warrennolan.com. See, I'm learning something here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll drop the link in Slack later.
I'm pretty sure I've got one of them. And that's Loyola.
It is not.
No, because they lost that. That's a good guess. But they lost.
The Boise game was in neutral court, wasn't it?
No, I was
That
was in Boise, I think, right? I think it may not have been. Oh boy, this is I'm running down my top 25 here.
All of the teams are undefeated on the road, if that changes your thinking. I think it's going off of winning percentage.
Wasn't that the question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just clarifying that these are all teams that haven't lost on the road, so.
Let me see. Is Stephen F. Austin one of them?
That's what undefeated means.
Stephen F. Austin is not one of them.
Albany.
Nope.
Ball State? No, that can't be right.
No.
Oh boy, Ross, are we going to need it in here?
We just talked about them.
All 3 of them?
Middle Tennessee.
Yep. Middle Tennessee is tied for first at 4-0.
Okay. Towson.
It's not Towson.
Fresno State.
Nope.
Good. See, you have to figure it's probably a team that isn't going to play guarantees, right? So, like, I know it's not Vermont, but a team like Vermont or Albany, even though I guess them, would probably be a bad guess.
Well, this one's kind of interesting. I think Greg probably wrote about them recently.
Okay, so it's a whack team.
No, it's not. It's not a whack team.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
They played in PK80.
Portland State.
Yeah. Portland State is 4-0 on the road.
Yeah, who did they beat today? Was it yesterday?
They beat Santa Clara yesterday.
That's it, Santa Clara. Yeah, that's a team that I may try to reach out and talk to them because that is, you know, a heck of a start for them because they competed with a Butler as well in PK80.
And Duke. They were tied with Duke for a little bit.
Yeah, yep. They were ahead at halftime. That's really interesting. So we got one more.
There's 3 teams tied at 3-0.
3 teams tied at 3-0. Have we talked about the third team on this podcast?
Not on this podcast, but 2 of the teams. Actually, we did mention one of them. We mentioned one of them, and then 2 of the others are going to be in our rankings this week.
BYU?
One of them. Yep, BYU is one.
Okay. Just because I knew they beat Utah State and Utah Valley, so I assume there might have been one more in there somewhere.
Yeah.
St.
Bonaventure is the other, and we're missing one more that we briefly mentioned earlier on the pod.
It's not Northeastern.
Nope. Southland.
Lamar.
It is Lamar. Lamar's 3-0. They have road wins against Tulsa, UTEP, and Coastal Carolina. So there you have it.
That was
a really good question. That was great.
Here's another fun one I was looking at. It's this current home winning streaks. What mid-major has the longest longest current home win streak?
I feel like I just saw this.
You know, I New Mexico State.
Because I think it was.
I know it's not New Mexico State, but I know they've been insane at home in the last 5 or 6 years.
Is it Valpo?
It's not Valpo. This team is.
This is going to drive me crazy.
This team is near and dear to my heart for a very unnecessary.
Oakland. Just joking.
No, God no.
South Dakota State.
See, this team benefits by essentially not playing home games in November or December.
Texas Southern.
They've won 23 straight at home.
Yes.
Because their only home opponents are in the SWAC.
when is the last non-conference home game they had? That'd be good to...
Don't take my trivia for next week.
No, I know. I'm trying to get through KenPom years here trying to find.
Mike Davis has made that university so much money by bringing his team out on the road and letting them get smacked.
Okay, so the last time they had a non-conference home game was in 2012.
Oh, my God.
I think that's very quick. That's very unofficial. But it was Louisiana Lafayette at the time, Louisiana Lafayette. And they also played Oakland at home in 2012. And Cal State Fullerton. Wow. They had 3 non-conference home games that year. And FIU.
That was
they had 4. How about that?
That's the year before Mike Davis got there, though.
No, he was there, it says.
So... I'm dumb and can't read.
Maybe that was his first year, so the schedule was
exactly
pretty much.
That was his first year. Interesting. That was a great question, Chris.
Thank you. I'll try to keep it up to high standard.
Oh, and because you mentioned St. Bonaventure, I had written this down before in case we talked about them. Jalen Adams, who returned 3 games ago, I just written down his – His last two games, 45 points, 18 assists. So he may be one of the more pivotal mid-major players. I need to check sources, but I think that's not bad. So he's exactly what we thought he'd be now that he's back. So that's exciting.
They are who we thought they were.
And they were a team who, as I was looking at them, who did they lose to just barely without him? I know they lost the opener to Niagara, wasn't good. Okay, TCU, I guess it wasn't just barely, but they have a win against Maryland. I guess that's it. But I was going to say, had they had him for that game against TCU and won that game, that starts to be kind of in the at-large discussion, but... Nonetheless, he's back and he's good.
Yeah. Bonaventure is probably undefeated if Adams plays the full time.
Right.
Although Adams didn't play against.
Against who?
TCU?
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
He also didn't play against when they played the Terps and they won that one, which was very impressive.
True. Yeah, I mean.
Big Ten.
Well, let's look at Bonaventure's schedules. I mean, Bonaventure has a game at Syracuse. They can win that game. There's your real quality win. You could chalk up Niagara to not having Adams. TCU, you could afford to lose then because you also have wins over Syracuse and Maryland. And then you take care of business in the A-10, win the games that you should win, and I think Bonaventure has a good argument.
Yeah. And they get Rhode Island at home, so that's a great opportunity. Also play them on the road, but that's a team to watch, and I'm certainly happy that he is back and healthy, because that I know that's a team a lot of us were excited for over this summer and had a lot of potential. So I'm glad we'll get to see that through.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And actually, that might be their game at St. Joe's. Chris, is that when we were going to try to be in Philadelphia, January 6th?
Ooh, yeah, I think Is that the Saturday?
There you go. So it's now called Phelan Adams Appreciation Tour. That's what it is.
Yeah. The annual mid-major madness road trip will be taking Philadelphia, hopefully, that first weekend of January.
I should probably
That will be one of the games that we plan on seeing.
I said I was going to do it.
Yeah, we should actually probably
do that out. I completely spaced on it.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait.
So if any of you folks in Philly that are listening to this, if you want to cop your boy a flight ticket from Indianapolis to Philly, I wouldn't say no to it.
Also, if you want to buy us an adult beverage or something or a meal, you know, give us a place to stay, tuck us in, whatever. It's getting weird now, but you
this
know,
is after hours on the podcast right here. This is where the real stuff happens. Yeah.
It's 10:30.
All right. Well, I'm thinking we should cut this off before it gets to after hours.
Agreed.
All right. Well, thank you everybody for listening to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. For Chris Schutte and Greg Mitchell, I'm Russ Steinberg. Have a good night. We'll see when we get this up. It'll probably be a while. Good night.